sitting on the subway, walking down the street, glancing into the car next to us at a stoplight. From time to time, almost everybody wonders about the stranger we see before us. What sort of a job does she have? Is the Chinese takeout for his date or his mother? Photographer Kevin Connolly knows that people wonder about him. He was born without legs. He's just over 3 feet tall and gets around mostly on top of a skateboard. He traveled through 15 countries in 3 months to take photos of the people staring and wondering about him. And he learned about some of the stories that people made up about him. In some places, they thought he was a beggar or an Iraq War veteran. His photo project is called the Rolling Exhibition. It's currently on display at the Kennedy Center here in Washington, D.C. You can see a selection of his photographs at npr.org/talk. So what strangers have you wondered about? And what story did you come up with? What do you think strangers see when they look at you? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Photographer Kevin Connolly joins us here in Studio 3, and it's nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Yeah, thanks for having me over.
And I guess people have stared at you your whole life.
A couple times, maybe. You
once
know?
Or twice?
Yeah, seven or eight, I think, was the most common count.
Uh-huh. And I gather this project started when you were in Vienna.
Yeah. The first photograph that I took was at the end of November in 2006 in Vienna, Austria. And really, the first shot was taken somewhat on a lark. I'd been traveling around by myself for the past, about a week or so. And it had come down to, you know, due to kind of both language barriers and me being, you know, a little strange looking, you know, my only real human interactions was either, you know, the subject of these projected narratives. I was either a beggar or a holy man, most commonly between Ukraine and Austria, where I was traveling, or it was just these kind of rampant stares. And it's something, you know, of course, I'd been subjected to my whole life, although subject, I think, might be a little bit too much harsh of a word. But when you're traveling by yourself, of course, you know, you feel it all that much more. And I was traveling down this back street of Vienna and knew this man was coming the other direction and looked the other way, because we've all done this at some point or another, in which, you know, we'll be staring at someone and they, you know, they're not aware of it. But the second they catch you, you know, you try and avert your eyes anywhere else.
You get self-conscious.
Yeah. So I stared across the street, kind of giving this man tacit permission to, you know, take a look, and snapped his photo. I snapped it without looking through the viewfinder, and I was just holding it from my hip. And thankfully, that first photo came out really well. I got back to my hostel, and there's some really cool things going on aesthetically within the photo. And so for the next 3 weeks or so, I traveled around throughout Europe and the East Coast of the United States, taking these photographs. And initially, it was just kind of a half-developed project, but more importantly, it just gave my hands something to do while traveling by myself. So go back to the United States and had about 1,200 photographs, which formed the skeletal prototype of the Rolling Exhibition.
What's it like to be mistaken for a holy man?
I wouldn't say ego-stroking ever, but actually, no. It was probably the most... It was the most surreal situation. I was on a Ukrainian subway, and you know, I was with my friend who I had met when I was 18. He's a native Ukrainian. His name was Serge, and we're traveling along. And this woman came up, and she began blessing me in Yiddish, pushing her hand down on my head. And you know, kind of just due to my height and how crowded the subway was at the time, you know, I actually ended up having my head kind of nestled in this bunch of Ukrainian butts. It kind of formed a little bit of a helmet as this woman's screaming blessings at me. And I think it was at that point when I began to realize, you know, how surreal and how strong some of these projected narratives can be.
And what are some of the others? So you mentioned a beggar, and I guess people see somebody without legs in some parts of the world. They assume there's a cup there. They should put some money in it.
Yeah, I think so. I think that, you know, the reason they assumed I was a beggar was for a number of reasons. One of the first, I think, being is that, you know, there's certain kind of accepted archetypes that we think of when we think of someone disabled. And certainly none of those is on a skateboard. A wheelchair would be the most common for someone like myself. And so to see someone on a skateboard, you might assume that, you know, he might not have the means to acquire a wheelchair. And so, you know, as a result of that, I ended up getting quite a bit of money. And the reason, you know, even despite saying, you know, no, I don't need any. And, you know, I was well-dressed, shaven, carrying a reasonably expensive camera. And it was kind of due to those elements and having money, despite my objections, physically pushed into my hands and my backpack that I kind of came to realize that in many ways they might be trying to explain me away as much for their own kind of sanity as for mine.
And again, the people in this country who mistake you for an Iraq war veteran, I guess that seems like a logical explanation.
Yeah, and I think that there's something really amazing in it, in that, you know, I was also assumed to be, when I was in Bosnia, a veteran or victim of the Balkan Wars. And, you know, if you compare those two instances together, it shows a little bit of nuance from country to country in terms of how we form our narratives. I would never be, you know, assumed to be a victim of the Balkan War here in the United States, just as vice versa in Bosnia.
You would never have been assumed to have been an Iraq War veteran.
Yeah.
And I understand it must have been a little uncomfortable for you in Bosnia, in Sarajevo, in that situation.
Yeah. And really, I think Sarajevo was kind of the where I really realized the heart of the series was. And that was these stories. And I guess the reason that it really hit me in Sarajevo, of all places, was that, you know, you get this variety of stories. You know, you're a car accident victim or you're a shark attack victim.
I wouldn't have. Yeah, sure. Shark attack. Yeah.
Well, it was a little boy, actually, that he was in a grocery store in New Zealand and he started to try and get out the words, was he eaten by a shark? And, you know, his mom was standing in line at the grocery store. And I'm sure there's a number of mothers out there who have done this where, you know, the kid starts to ask a question just a little too loud, you know, and you start getting a little flushed and you cut their mouths. Hmm. So he only got about half the question out.
Kids ask really interesting questions.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think one of the best was, I was in Bozeman, which is where I've been going to school for the past couple of years, and I was in a grocery store, and this little girl came up to me in a summer dress, and she just walked up, and she was like, "Is it a trick?" And, you know, I had just shaved my head. I'd been skateboarding around town, so here's this sweaty, reasonably bulky guy on a skateboard sitting eye to eye with this little girl in a summer dress, and she's being just as assertive as I could ever be. And so I end up, you know, getting a little riled up. I'm like, no, it's not a trick. You know, there's no smoke or mirrors. And she looked down at, I wear a shoe kind of with a Birkenstock sole and a leather exterior around myself to just kind of protect me when I'm running around. And she looked at it and she was like, take off the tire. It was just a really funny kind of confrontational moment there.
I understand somebody has once walked away with your shoe.
Yeah. I was told, anyway, I went out skiing one day and I stuffed my shoe underneath a bench in the ski lodge and got back and sure enough, it was gone. And I was scared. It's not something that you can pick up at Payless, this shoe. And I was getting ready to head out to New Zealand. So to try and find a replacement would have been difficult in the best of situations. And ran around putting up signs being like, you know, you stole this guy's shoe and please give it back. You can't really get around too well without it. And I talked to one of the ladies who was cleaning at the time, cleaning the lodge. And she said that there were two middle-aged women who had been sitting down and they'd pulled the shoe out and they were looking at it. And she heard that they had considered making it into a flower pot, as it was quite pretty and vaguely in a pot shape. So, you know, it was returned later that night, anonymously. but, yeah, it was certainly...
So you not only get mistaken for all kinds of things, people make up narratives about your shoe.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I think that that's a reasonable thing to do. I mean, a lot of the stuff that I use and do is just so... for lack of a better word, weird looking.
Well, let's get some callers on the line. Narratives do you make up about strangers? What narratives do you think strangers make up about you? 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Tom's on the line from Rochester, New York.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I talking to your screener, I'm handsome, and I think that people look at attractive people. I've heard this in studies and say, gosh, they must have a great social life, a great sex life. Life is totally easy for them if you appear to be in shape, whether you keep yourself in shape or not. I mean, they just assume all these things. And I've got health problems just like everyone else, and I've got family problems and money problems, and interested to hear your response to that.
Hmm. Is that a narrative that has occurred to you, Kevin Connolly?
You know, as far as the difference that people project from what appears to be on the surface versus what's actually going on, yeah, I think absolutely. And I think that, you know, anyone, you know, whether or not they're the subject of these prolonged looks, and, you know, certainly people are, anyone who sits kind of out of, you know, what any individual would consider to be the aesthetic norm, you know, we're all culpable of doing these things. We're all culpable of staring and making up these stories. It's the sole reason why, you know, a filmmaker or a writer can actually eat at the end of the day. It's just something that we do as human beings.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
I have 12-year-old twins, and I tried to tell them, I mean, it's interesting, so I said, don't stare. You know, you're going to take two looks. And I often try to, if the time is right, to have them engage a person and introduce themselves, and if they feel like talking about whatever the condition is, especially my daughter, who's very empathetic. Do you feel uncomfortable when people engage? Or I find often people are just relieved, and you know, not always, but often are relieved to have someone actually be interested in the condition or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think you're right on in that respect, in that, you know, this storytelling, you know, impulse, and also the impulse to kind of stare and have your curiosity satisfied, is very human. And so to try and suppress that is kind of, you know, counteracts whatever you're doing. And so, yeah, to be forthright and honest about, you know, something you want to know, I think is a perfectly good thing to do. And, you know, who knows, you might spark a dialogue and maybe make a friend out of the deal.
Oftentimes they do. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Tom. We're talking with Kevin Connolly, who was born without legs and visited 31 cities in 15 countries, taking photographs of people looking at him. And the exhibit is at the Kennedy Center here in Washington, D.C. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's get Jenna. Is that right?
Gina.
Gina from San Jose, California. Go ahead, Gina.
Yes. Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My brother, who is now 30 years old, is autistic, and when I was a child and growing up, my brother would often have outbursts in public places, and like the mall or a restaurant or someplace like that, and, you know, I grew up being stared at, and as a child, you develop kind of, I don't know, kind of like an animosity towards people who are staring at your sibling. We had people come up to us and say, you know, are you abusing that child? You know, things like that. And it was just really hard. I mean, it got to the point where as a kid, I would say things like, well, he's for sale if you want him, you know. I mean, I would just, it just, you develop these really interesting defense mechanisms and, you know.
It sounds like, interesting. Gina, it sounds like you, as a kid, were you mortified to attract this attention?
More when I was in, like, junior high, when I was in that real awkward phase, I was very, very mortified. But as a younger child, it just seemed normal to me because I didn't know any better. But I didn't understand why people were staring until I got older. And then when I moved out of my house, my parents' house, and I realized what it was like to not live with someone who was autistic that attracted attention, it was quite an eye opener for me. I mean, it was a huge paradigm shift in my reality.
I wonder, Kevin, did you go through that awkward phase?
Yeah, I mean, I was concerned about anything that, you know, I think a standard middle schooler would be as well. I think to a certain extent it might be a phase of life. You know, I was worried about the no-legged thing. Trying to go to a school dance was always a little difficult.
I could see that.
But you know, also like, you know, acne and being inarticulate and a little, you know, a little overweight, you know, all of those things added up, and was just kind of personally for me, just part of my insecurities going through middle school.
Well, Gina, thanks very much for the phone call.
Oh, thank you so much for taking my call.
All right.
Thank you, Gina.
Let's go to Amanda. Amanda's calling us from San Francisco.
Hi, thanks. When I was in my 20s, I lived in Utah. And I just, and this was like early 1990, and I put a fake nose ring in, and the response that I got was so incredibly negative. I would have security guards following me around, accused of changing prices on things that were actually on sale, and I even had somebody chase me down in a car and get out and yell at me about being on welfare, and he was tired of paying for me being on welfare, and I was actually an honors student in college, so that was pretty shocking, and I decided I needed to get my nose actually pierced because I wanted to know the truth of people and how they judge based on the surface. So, and I also really want to honor the inspiration of your attitude that you're bringing to this subject and making it open and inviting people to explore their own biases and how they see others and themselves. Thank you so much.
Yeah, well, thank you. I mean, and congrats on getting the nose piercing. That's absolutely awesome.
Thanks.
It's a little less unusual in San Francisco.
Well, completely. And I actually don't have it pierced anymore because my body doesn't like the metal. But, you can pierce anything out here.
Thanks very much for the call, Amanda. We'll leave it right there.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
And Kevin, where are you going next?
Oh, geez. In the near future, hopefully I'll be going home to have a nap at some point. It's been a bit of a long day. I think I'm going back to Montana for the next 3 weeks, and after that, going to work on a documentary about artists performing at the Olympics and Paralympics. So I'll be bouncing around the world again, going to China, India, South Africa, and England. Shortly thereafter, moving to New Zealand.
Moving to New Zealand?
Moving to New Zealand. I'm going to go get an apartment on the beach.
Sounds like a great idea.
That's the postgraduate present.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
And thanks very much for being with us today.
Yeah, thank you.
Kevin Connolly is a recent graduate of Montana State University. His exhibition, The Rolling Exhibition, is on display at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. You can see selected photographs at our website, npr.org/talk. He was with us here in Studio 3A. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.